Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 4044 of The Bugle, one of the world's top 10 billion sources of hope in a cruel, cruel universe. With me, Andy Zaltzman. Let me introduce myself for those who don't know me. I like thinking about the look on a Labrador's face if you threw a tennis ball for it to chase down a bobsled run. But I dislike people who actually throw tennis balls down bobsled runs for Labradors to chase. That's simple cruelty. I also, for a bit of further background detail on what I'm like as a person, think it odd that if you offered a penguin a bucket of herring, or a functioning set of wings, or a jetpack, the indulgent, fish-obsessed, gravity-bothering, ornithological incompetent would choose the fish. Sometimes these species just don't want to help themselves. Welcome to The Bugle. I'm joined this week by two of the many people in the world who this week were not elected to become the new president of Portugal. I think they've kept the same one they had before, for which we should be thankful, because instead we have them on The Bugle. And I will introduce them in the traditional style with what may be a fact or maybe a lie. Your choice. Here in London, it's the former Lusitanian emissary to the League of Nations, Tiffany Stevenson.
Hello.
Welcome back, Tiff.
Hi, that is a truth.
All right, good.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, checked your Wikipedia page.
Yeah, it's on Snopes. Go look it up.
So since you were last on the show, you've been up in Edinburgh. And
have for the full month.
How was that?
It was, well, the show was called Bombshell, and it did feel like the apocalypse was happening while we were there. So I just treated every single show like it was the end of days. It was really great fun.
Right.
Might not be here tomorrow. Let's have a great show.
Yeah.
Be outrageous.
I've certainly had audiences leave my shows thinking it was the end of days. And in New York City, it's a man described by Noam Chomsky as the most natural dancer I've ever seen in a scuba diving outfit. 5 stars. That's from Underwater Funk magazine in October 1998. It's Hari, the Groove Shark, Kondabolu.
Oh, hey, Ed. I wish I got the lie. Aww. Why do I always get the true one?
How's things in America, Hari?
You've read the news.
Oh, yeah. Okay, right. Okay. Good point. So we are recording on the 22nd of September 2017. Today is World Car Free Day. So none of us are recording this whilst in a car. It's our little gesture. And to mark this day, we are giving you, the listeners, a selection of free honks to use as a pedestrian. Because that's fundamentally why most people still drive cars, just so you have the license to honk in people's faces, which if you did it by just going up and honking a horn in their face would be more socially unacceptable.
Yeah,
that's why the car's still popular.
Yeah,
well, exactly.
Yeah.
It's a basic human instinct to honk in people's faces. So we are now allowing you, pedestrians, pedestrian buglers, simply download these sounds onto your telephone or carve them into a circular bit of vinyl and play them through an amplifier whilst walking down the streets of wherever you livesville to express your disapproval at the driving skills of your fellow humans. Choose from one of the following honks. I will interpret them for you. That was a disappointing piece of driving. I suggest you try much harder in future. Ouch. That was one of my favourite feet you just drove over. Then there is no universe in which you should be allowed to be in charge of a large slab of fast moving metal. F*** you. And finally, the evidence of your attitude to your fellow road users suggests in unarguable terms that you may well be, and in all likelihood are in fact, a total c***. On this day, the 22nd of September, in 480 BC, or BCE, we're still waiting for clarification on which one of those 2 years it was, one of the most important naval battles in the history of Europe, a battle that helped shape the political and artistic evolution of the world between the Greeks and the Persians, the Battle of Salamis, I think it's pronounced, which the Greeks defeated the Persian navy, armed only with spiced Italian sausages. Bit of history for you there. It's not enough Salamis jokes knocking around on the circuit these days.
Yeah. Can you crack out a mortadella one as well?
On this day in 1906, Leonardo Torres y Quevedo successfully demonstrated the world's first remote control In Bilbao, he guided a boat, a remote-controlled boat, from the shore in 1907. That is the greatest invention in history, 111 years ago today. Thank you, Senor Corvedo, for saving me hundreds of thousands of three-metre journeys to and from my television set. You are the greatest hero in history. The amount of time, the amount of leisure time that man has created for humanity. And as always, a section of the Bugle is going straight in the bin this week. Well, today is also, it's not only World Car Free Day, it's also World Rhino Day. And to commemorate this, we've got a special rhinoceros pullout, including a free fertilised rhinoceros egg for you to plant in your window box, which should be a lovely little rhino cub by next March if the winter isn't too harsh. We have rhino facts, including that the computer joystick was invented by former US president and current Mount Rushmore big-faced rock hunk Theodore Roosevelt on his post-presidential wildlife slaying wind-down African extravaganza back in 1909, when he famously killed around about, we've talked about this on the Bugle before, something like 10,000 animals as he wound down from his... A little bit D-mob happy after leaving the White House. But on that, he invented the joystick on that
really
that
pressing
trip.
My buttons with this bit, Andy.
Yep. Thank you very much. He won a game of rhinoceros rodeo, which was basically rodeo on a rhinoceros, as you'd expect, by controlling his rhino by its horn and occasionally pressing its eyelids like buttons. That was the invention of the computer joystick. Big Theo.
I heard that he also broke his nose and had to get rhinoplasty.
Oh,
very good.
Oh, we should have thought of that one.
We both started strong today. Well done. We also have a competition for you buglers to suggest an improvement to the rhinoceros. Yes, it's been a successful and enduring species, but its progress has been held up somewhat against the greatest species in the world, such as humans, by being too easy to shoot and having horns that are better at medicine than all of the world's leading pharmaceutical companies and scientists put together. Or at least that's what I've been told by my friend Chinese Brenda. So which... what? So we ask you buglers, what do you think the rhino should be doing to improve on its current existence? Horns as Wi-Fi routers, flippers instead of feet, or even longer, thinner feet that could act as useful runners on ice? I mean, we pay to watch rhino ice hockey, wouldn't we?
Yeah. Yeah. Rhino needs a personality trait, though. There's no... It's like hippos. They've got, like, hungry hippos.
Right.
What is it that the rhino has? It needs, like, a, you know...
You're saying it's all business. There's not enough...
Yeah, you know, like...
flair species.
Yeah, yeah, right. You know, like, crazy monkey.
Yep.
I don't know. I can't think of any others.
But the rhino's definitely lagging behind
rhinos,
in that.
Yeah, like, maybe it's apathetic. Maybe that's its thing, the apathetic rhino.
It does look kind of apathetic. Chris, do you have any stats on... turnout in rhinoceros elections over the last
25%.
25. I mean, that just shows.
Yeah, the apathetic rhino.
That's local election level. That's appalling. And also, we have some rhino what ifs. What if baby Stalin had been swapped for a baby Sumatran rhinoceros at birth? How different would the 20th century have been? And what if the Titanic had been modelled on the rhinoceros instead of built like a conventional boat? I think there'd have been pluses and minuses with that.
Yeah.
I think it would have nudged the iceberg out of the way, but less smooth through the water.
Would Rose have still have hogged that whole door to herself?
Right, so you'd have had Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet on a massive rhino horn. Yeah. I'd have paid to see that.
Would the rhino's mouth be closed? Because if it was open, it seems like very counterproductive. The water would go in.
I mean, I'm guessing there is a reason why boats have traditionally not been modelled on rhinoceros, despite the obvious ice-breaking capabilities of it.
But if the mouth was open, and it was, would it surely not be taking in water and letting it back out? Or it wouldn't be breathing through it, would it? But it might be able to...
I don't know. We need to get a scientist on. Chris, can you just call up? Are there any, just look in the Yellow Pages.
Yep.
Does the Yellow Pages still exist? I think they cancelled it. See if there's any local rhino scientists who can come in and clear this up before the end of this show. Top story this week. And Trump at the United Nations. Sensational action from the High Priest of Prating. Hari, this all happened at the UN on your doorstep. What's your take on the extraordinary performance of your national leader?
Well, he didn't insult that many people. That's good.
Right.
He was fairly even. Didn't yell. There weren't any threats, you know, the normal like dictatorial behavior that we're used to. He did, however, say that he's a big fan of the United Nations, in part because he built the Trump Tower across from the UN, which ended up being good for him.
Right.
The audience was very confused as to how that was relevant. It was not a good speech. Apparently Kim Jong-un laughed so hard that peasant blood came out of his nose.
Wow.
Was it an ungood speech?
It was very ungood.
His sound bites have been really quite incredible with Kim Jong, haven't they? Because it was Fire and Fury, then it was Locked and Loaded. And I was like, I think he's just naming Jason Statham films. That's what he's doing. Like describing himself as militaristic, and I think that he's got that confused with materialistic.
Right.
Because you can't describe yourself as militaristic when you dodge the draft. A number of times. And the other one, what was the other one he said? Rocket Man. He called him a Rocket Man, which I love because in Scotland, rocket means idiot. So maybe his mum taught him that one.
Oh, right.
You know, like, bolt your rocket.
He also got a nation confused. He created the African nation of Nambia. I think he meant Namibia.
And maybe crossed it with Gambia?
Gambia and Zambia.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
But to be fair, most Americans probably would not have thought Namibia or Gambia was a country until this came out.
Right. So basically he's being educational by introducing Americans not to just one country, Namibia, but to three countries, including Zambia and Gambia, that he could also have been referring to. Also,
oh, yes, it was deliberate. It was absolutely deliberate.
Right. I mean, also, I mean, you think about it, he's helping the Namibian economy, which, you know, is not one of the world's great economies, to improve by, you know, save a syllable, boost the economy, all that extra time spent saying the "it," the first "it" of Namibia.
Well, yeah, if you add that up. All the ink on your official documents.
Yeah, you add that up over 100 years, that could boost the economy by up to £30,000. You can't sniff at that in this day and age.
What about 30,000 to use another African currency, Zimbabwean dollars?
Right.
Which is about a penny.
Well, sadly, I don't think the Zimbabwean dollar is quite as glorious as it used to be. I think...
you're joking.
Yeah. I mean, we should cling to it. We should never let it go. And it's the favourite. It is the official currency of the Bugle podcast, the Zimbabwean dollar. You're getting paid in Zimbabwean dollars.
Am I?
Yeah.
I've always wanted someone to say you look $1 million and then say Zimbabwean. I like the fact that he was in the morning of the first day. Like the Secretary General appealed for calm rhetoric.
Oh yeah,
and then put Trump up first, which is sort of like saying, "Oh, Mr. Bull, welcome to the China shop. Come in, but do be careful. Everything's terribly. Oh, that's the Ming vase broken."
It got some pretty poor reviews. The Iranian foreign minister called it an ignorant hate speech that belongs in medieval times. Which I think Trump will probably put on his election posters next time. Sew up his core vote. North Korea called it a dog's bark. I'm not sure entirely what they meant by that. but that could be complimentary or rude. But we did have Kim Jong-un describing Donald Trump as a dotard this week. Now, no one knows if he invented this word, or it is, in fact, technically, I was just reading, a 14th century Old English word. And, it is possible that Kim Jong-un is just a massive fan of early English poetry. He's been studying.
You'd normally go to Boris Johnson for one of those.
Yeah.
He seems to have the dictionary of out-of-date, ridiculous, stupid, idiotic things to say.
You'd really emphasise the syllable dick in that.
Yeah. Dick.
He said, "It is entirely up to us whether we lift the world to new heights or let it fall into a valley of disrepair." Which, I mean, does, bearing in mind that he is the man who spent the last 18 months holding the world by the ankles, dangling it over the edge of the valley of disrepair. It is entirely up to you. Yes!
I want to go to the valley of disrepair.
Yeah, and you imagine you'll get a pretty cheap holiday there.
Yeah. Is it near, like, well, what would it be near? Like, is it like a canyon?
Well, I don't know.
I imagine it's somewhere in America.
There was that, you know, the famous poet, the...
it's called America.
In remembering the great victory that led to this body's founding, so the origin of the United Nations after the Second World War, we must never forget that those heroes who fought against evil also fought for the nations that they love. Patriotism led the Poles to die to save Poland, the French to fight for a free France, and the Brits to stand strong for Britain. Now, I mean, it's amazing that patriotism proved, you know, apparently, according to no less a source than the President of America, the decisive factor in the Second World War. And imagine how different the result could have been if the teams on the other side had been patriotic as well. Hang on, Mr. History! Hang on! Basically, the thrust of Trump's speech was that nations acting in their own self-interest creates a more stable world. So let us just check with history on that one. I'm delighted to have history on the line now to clear this one up for us. Hello, history.
Hello, Andy. Big fan of the show.
History, thanks for joining us on the Bugle. Is Mr. Trump right to say that nations acting in their own self-interest does, in fact, create a more stable world?
Hang on, Andy. Let me just check my notes for you. No, not there either. No, definitely not. Oh, definitely not that one. No, it's a definite no, Andy. It's no. Although it does, I guess, depend what you mean by stable. Do you mean stable as in riven by conflict, inequality, resentment and exploitation?
No, Hish, I don't really mean that.
All that's a no, then. Definitely a no. Anything else?
How are you feeling at the moment, history?
I don't know! I keep telling myself conflicting stories and I don't understand anything anymore! I'm scarred by regret and I'm sick of people flatly ignoring my lessons, but I don't really f***ing know what lessons I'm trying to teach anymore! I'm confused, I'm angry, and I'm f***ing tired! Go f***ing find yourself another pass! I quit!
Well, that all came flooding out there. History,
Andy,
having a tough time.
Yep. Why is history northern?
Well, it's just, look at the Industrial Revolution.
You know nothing.
Yeah. Andy, can you call history back and see if he repeats himself?
Boom! Well, yes. I mean, if history is anything like my accents, yes, he does repeat himself.
I mean, all Trump had to do, honestly, is just do the Bill Pullman speech from Independence Day. Because it wouldn't have made sense, but what he said really didn't make sense. And at least it would have been enjoyable for everyone. And if he did it every time, it's like, oh, Trump's going to pull out the speech again. That's great. And it's just, at least it's something to look forward to when he speaks. It's not going to make sense either way. And who doesn't like that speech? It's very unifying.
He could do like loads of different speeches from big films. And then every time it would be a treat. You go, how's he going to interpret Pacino in Any Given Sunday? And that would, you're right, you would just look forward to that.
Yeah, I think this could be the future for all political rhetoric, just rabble rousing speeches from great movie scenes.
Yeah,
I mean, also the Trump has as well documented, a proud family history of stealing other people's speeches.
So, I mean, did anyone like what he said? I mean, it felt like none of the leaders liked him.
Oh, Netanyahu loved it.
Netanyahu was the only one. Yeah. And it sort of reminded me of, like, you know, when you have a birthday party and all your cool mates are there.
I never had cool mates. I don't know. I've never had a cool mate.
Well, just your friends. Let's just say friends. All your friends are there and your mum's forced you to invite your weird, shameful cousin, you know, the one that tried to get off with you and said, what, it's not illegal. you're like, Mum, no one likes him. No one wants him here. And she's like, he's a nice boy. He always asks how I am. And your mum is basically Netanyahu.
Right.
In that scenario. Yes, who was the only person there. Who, don't ask me about my weird cousin.
Okay.
I could see you looking at me going...
You did kind of leave that little sub-story hanging there, but, you know, let's move on.
Well, Theresa May kind of addressed him without actually saying his name. She basically said that, like, climate change and terrorism are kind of on the same page, and, you know, by neglecting working on climate change, you know, you're damaging the world. So she was basically sub-tweeting Trump. and here's one of the highlights of what she said. Maybe some of us are more concerned about climate change because we live on the earth and not in our big fat heads. My God, he has a mouth that looks like an anus. The environment trumps money. It trumps money. Yeah, I'm talking about him. you know, and that's at least that's what I wrote down.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Do you think Trump's the kind of guy who doesn't believe in global warming because sometimes it's snowing in Washington? And that is why they call it the White House.
I don't think he believes in global warming because he's the devil and it's hot in hell.
There's a danger in this, though, that if Theresa May says that global warming is as big a threat as terrorism, that's he's just going to, you know, nuke the Amazon or something. Teach it a lesson.
Show those trees who's boss.
Yeah.
I think we need to get Hari in to, like, interpret all of her speeches, though. Because if you could help with Brexit means Brexit, if you could help us out with what she means there.
It means we f***ed up.
What, that yes. That is exactly what it means. That is essentially what Brexit means Brexit does mean, is we f***ed up, brackets, and we're now playing for time. And, in fact, as we record, Theresa May is in Florence, delivering a speech on Brexit, essentially attempting to slap a €20 billion note down on Europe's arse, saying, "What are you going to do with that?" I mean, we're still obviously waiting for the mud to settle on the aftermath of Brexit, so we can mould that mud into the shape of an extended middle finger, fire it in the kiln of democratic futility, and then just plonk it in the middle of Britain as a legacy for future generations to gaze at. But she said, "History will judge Brexit." Quotes. Not for the differences we faced, but for the vision we showed. A vision comes in many forms. I think the vision we've showed, very similar to the vision showed by a dweeb who's just been punched in the face by a passing Terminator. also, she said, we'll be remembered not for the challenges we endured, but for the creativity we used to overcome them. Creativity. Creativity is what I want from a passing midfielder in a football match. Or possibly someone painting a mural in a chapel in the Vatican. Creativity in major trade negotiations, that's worrying to me. I don't want them getting poetic about it.
Oh, it's a word salad again, isn't it? Yeah. It just means she is the master of the pointless euphemism, isn't she, or soundbite. I mean, like, visions are what Cordelia has in Angel, the TV series.
Right, okay,
so future visions, that's, you know,
that's
she
that.
Gets a blinding headache and then goes, someone's going to be attacked in an alleyway by a demon.
Right.
So maybe that is what she means.
That's out of my cultural reference zone.
Really?
Angel, yeah.
No Buffy the Vampire Slayer or Angel or
no,
Joss Whedon?
They were sport on, I think, so I missed it.
Morgan Freeman versus Russia news.
My favourite sort of news, this.
This is a good segment. You should keep this segment. Russia claims that the U.S. is using Morgan Freeman to attack them because a video was released from the activist organization ATTN, or Attention, where Freeman encouraged Americans to take a serious look at Russia's interference in the 2016 election, and he compared it to a movie script. And Freeman claimed that this was an act of war. So basically he said that this, like, imagine a movie where, like, a Russian maniac. And he kind of, like, you know, tried to get people to really be afraid of the situation. And Russia has some reason to be suspicious. I mean, first of all, they're pretty sure that March of the Penguins was a military training video of the U.S. weaponizing penguins.
Matter of time. Surely a matter of time.
It was about, I mean, it still hasn't proven that it hasn't been. He made it sound like a nature film, but there's no evidence that won't happen. How about that?
Well, surely also the torpedo must have been modelled on the penguin. I mean, that's, you know, that is essentially a penguin diving in to catch a fish. Just going a bit further and banging into another ship, isn't it?
And blowing it up.
Yeah, I mean, that's penguin all over, isn't it?
You've really got it in for penguins today, haven't you?
Yeah. They've had it too easy for too long.
Also, Russia was kind of already in a weakened position because they had asked James Earl Jones to voice several videos in their attempts to counter what they called the Freeman Offensive. And also, Yakov Smirnov said, "In America, you can always find a party. In Soviet Russia, the party always finds you." It's unrelated to anything, but he had to get it in.
Who did the cast? casting for this. I heard De Niro's furious that he didn't get a call. He didn't even get seen for it. Also, no female parts again. That is a fail, Hollywood.
Shocking. Shocking. Never rains but it pours.
Have you watched any of the response videos to it, Hari?
No, I have not.
Oh, I watched the Alex Jones response to this.
Oh,
where,
God.
Oh, it was glorious. What I really wish is that before Alex Jones does any video, like, that he would swallow the food that he was eating 10 seconds before they turned the camera on, because he just sounds like he's swallowing. And he got this Trump supporter on who was like, you know, we're talking about the guy who played God. People take this guy seriously. We're talking about the guy who was in Shawshank, as if the video opened up going, the first time I met Vladimir Putin. But he kept referring to him the whole way through, Alex Jones, as Morgan Freedman, like consistently making him Jewish, which sort of fits with a conspiracy theorist very well, doesn't it? If we can make it the fault of Jewish people, we will. But the video, on the video, it said CIR, and his quip was, what does CIR stand for? You know, crap info royale. Burger King make that, apparently. He's got Freeman confused with Samuel L. Jackson in Pulp Fiction. You should do an episode of you, like, listening back to a former Bugle and just getting all your reactions to it.
Oh, right.
I sheltered Andy from most of those.
Yeah. We've destroyed the tapes. In other showbiz news, Kellyanne Conway not happy with the Emmys. Tiff is our official Kellyanne Conway correspondent.
Yeah, everywhere seemed to be showing Kellyanne Conway's Emmy roundup as if she's an entertainment channel and someone asked her. But she was on Fox News and she was like, what do I think about the Emmys? This is my Kellyanne. Do you like it? Well, this is what she said. She said, well, some of those actresses didn't eat for like 2 months. They got themselves primed and preened and they didn't eat for 2 months and dared to criticize Trump. I haven't eaten for 5 years and I would never say anything bad about our president. Like, I just watched it going, seriously, f*** off, mate. Her main criticism was that they got primed, preened and skinny to repeat themselves over and over again. What are you talking about? That's literally your career, Kellyanne Conway. Just putting makeup on her haunted ass face. Like, she is being haunted, by the way, by a 3,000-year-old demon. That's why she just looks tired all the time.
Right,
so.
That's a fact.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. It's exhausting.
Okay. Well, thank you for digging that up as our Kellyanne Conway correspondent.
Andy's just questioned a fact there.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's, notable Emmys, of course. So, 2 Emmys for a former Bugle co-host. I think Mr. John Oliver received the Emmys for most elongated departure from a podcast and least enthusiasm for physical contact on a football pitch. But very little contest for that. So, well done to John for those. But it was odd for Kellyanne Conway to complain that the Emmys had become too politicised, given that politics has become too showbizificated. Exhibit 1, your f***ing boss, Conway! Your f***ing boss!
Yeah, she said it was, you know, this is why people are tuning out. So people are tuning out because, you know, we want to be entertained. We don't want actors to have an opinion on politics. You know, she was like, it's disappointing when things like Miss America are politicised. Like, really? Or isn't Miss America just disappointing as a concept?
That's an odd one to pick on, that, isn't it?
Yeah, she was like, sports have got politicised. Sorry, my voice is running out of batteries. But sports have got politicised and now awards and Miss America and we just want to be entertained. And then she said she was really pleased that Kate McKinnon had won for doing an impression of her. Like, she was like, I was so pleased, but she won for mocking you. It's like getting dumped and going, yeah, but it's because I was too good looking. That's why I got dumped. And then she said she enjoyed Sean Spicer.
All right. Those words, that can't be said that often.
Well, she said that she enjoyed Sean Spicer because he showed that he was a man of good humor and introspection. She said, "This is something that folks in Hollywood often lack, which is introspection and good humor." But then when she was told that Spicer didn't write the sketch himself, but the writers from Hollywood did, she responded, "No, they didn't. That cannot be proven."
British baby names news now, and the latest rankings have come out for the most popular names in Britain for new babies, as opposed to old babies that have been renamed. They're discounted from the charts. You've got to make a decision and stick to it. The most popular boy's name in Britain now is Mohammed, in its various different spellings. You add them all up, that gets to the top of the rankings. The most popular spelling of Mohammed is in itself is in the top 10, having knocked out William. In the girls' charts, Poppy has been knocked out of the top 10, replaced with a more geopolitically aware opium trade. there were fewer than three Nigels born in 2016, despite Nigel Farage having been so prominent.
Because it's ridiculous to call a baby Nigel.
Well, there were thousands.
Who looks at a baby and goes, "That's a Nige. Look at that." Well, it's a bit of a Herbert's name.
Well, there are a lot of names that suit babies but don't suit adults, and vice versa. So maybe, you know, your name should evolve with you. But basically, Nigel is as statistically popular as, amongst other names, Ermintrude, Tinder, Junk, Medea, QWERTY UYOP, Urethra, Shitbag, Plank, Wanker, Bugle, and So some surprise names in there. There have been 28 babies called Baby. The name Baby has been 28. That is unimaginative parenting.
Genuinely. Would Snopes check that out?
Snopes would check that out. I mean, that's straight off the internet.
When you first started, I did think those were all true. I was like, someone called their kid Junk. Tinder didn't even register.
I'm sure that's one of Sarah Palin's kids, isn't it? Four Daenerys's, so the evidence of
Daenerys.
I'm out of the loop.
Chris, I got annoyed there as well. I felt an instant reaction to your mispronunciation of the mother of dragons.
Daenerys, of course, in Game of Thrones, named that way because she was when she was born. Her father got absolutely hammered and was asked who his favourite Motown singer was. And he said, "Daenerys and the Supremes." It's f***ing great. That's the origin of that. That's a fact. Seven Zeus's, 21 Apollos, 4 Jupiters. So Zeus beating Jupiter, that's good news for the Greeks as they attempt to recover from their economic catastrophes.
Any Norse gods in there?
I think there were a few Thors.
How many Barringtons?
Barrington, fewer than three. Oh. Sadly, why Barrington, Chris?
It's a power name, as far as I'm concerned.
It's a power name. Ironically, not really a power batsman back in the '60s. For any cricket fans listening,
what does it take to make a power name? Is it like more than three syllables or three syllables plus?
Picture your dream boss.
Yeah, it's you, Chris.
Okay, Christopher's a power name then. Yeah,
right. Oh, find how many Chris's there were. There are 41 boys called Chris.
Yeah, good lads.
Were there any Tiffany's? I feel like my name peaked in the 90s.
87 Tiffany's, 346 in 1996.
Yeah.
How many Haris?
Hari, 83 Haris. That's up.
How many Hari Kondabolus?
I'll put in Kondabolu. None, sadly. There's no babies called Bugle. Sadly, that is a disappointment. Matter of time. 11.
Also, there were no babies named Colonel Reginald Dyer, who was the man responsible for the Amritsar massacre of 1919.
Let's go.
How many Donalds? Just out of interest.
Donald. There were a few Donalds. I did check this. Donald. 9 boys called Donald, down from 23.
So he's had it. He's caused that.
And 3. This really got me. 3 babies called Isis. But those are parents who have been storing up the news to catch up with on their digital set-top box and have not caught up. I mean, that's...
Maybe they're naming it after the chain of really cheap hotels.
I don't care what you're naming it after. But certain names come with a connotation, I think. And I believe ISIS as a brand is now tainted.
It's a bit Downton Abbey, isn't it?
I'm not going out on a limb when I...
Their market share's gone down, have they?
Yeah. Right. I mean, maybe that's it, because that was the name of the dog in Downton Abbey, was it? ISIS. So maybe that's parents thinking, no, the dog in Downton Abbey will outlast. And maybe this is reclaiming the name.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if any of those ISISes have since been renamed Daesh or not, but one of them not.
But also, maybe they are banking on ISIS winning and they're going for the gamble. Like, oh, you know, if this works out, this kid has a great name.
Right.
It's low percentage, but, you know, way to go.
Very low percentage. From a religious point of view, clear winner. Like I said, Muhammad, now the most popular boy's name. 6 Jesuses. 67 Moseses. Go on, Team J! 5 Vishnus, no Buddhas, but 180 buddies. Which I don't know, can you count that? Is that short for Buddha?
Mm, yeah, I reckon we can count it.
And no Confuciuses, but 387 Connies. Which are... Your emails now, this came in from Richard Tibbles, who writes, Andy, I'm currently attending the UNESCO Second World Open Educational Resources Congress in Ljubljana, Slovenia. I was surprised to hear a reference to Slow Cook Democracy from Bugle issue 293 from the Slovenian TV news host and MC for the event, Igor Bergant. And apparently he name-checked me and John in his reference to... Slow cooked, so our influences felt far and wide, even at UN events with delegates from over 100 countries. So this is the kind of power we wield on this show, Tiff and Harry. So are there any you know, words of wisdom you'd like to send out for future UNESCO conferences to pick up on?
Yeah, food banks are not uplifting.
Right, okay, yes. Yeah. Well, this was Jacob Rees-Mogg.
Yeah.
As previously discussed on Recent Bugles, the Member of Parliament for 1764, he described that people using food banks, he described as uplifting because it shows how compassionate we are as a nation.
Yeah, to help other people, but they caused it. It's sort of like him slashing you with a knife and saying, look, maybe that non-arsehole over there has a plaster for you. Yeah, I'm aware that I'm the one that's cut you, but don't expect me to stitch it up. Look, if I had cut you, that guy with the plaster wouldn't have been able to help you. I'm basically creating heroes.
Essentially, what he said was similar to you know, saying that the fact that we in Britain now apply basic animal cruelty standards in abattoirs shows that we are an extremely vegan nation.
Yeah.
He also claimed that Buckingham Palace was simply a care facility for an elderly woman.
Oh, he's really... Do you know what? He's managed to do the unthinkable, Rees-Mogg, which is to make Boris look more likable.
Right. So, yeah, it's... I mean, that's an extremely high tariff. I mean, that's what he's been sent, presumably, to do.
Do you think so?
Yes.
By people behind the scenes.
By the Bilderberg group. Do keep your emails coming in to hellobuglers@thebuglepodcast.com. That is all we have time. I'm sorry, we did have a story lined up about a penis that had been drawn in the background of a children's cartoon that had provoked various complaints from from watchers, including... A comment online saying, this is scandalous. This is how they implant subliminal thoughts. With a barely discernible graffitied penis and in the background of a kid's cartoon. I'm not sure that is how you implant subliminal. Have you ever watched kids' advertising? That does not exactly scream subliminal, does it? It generally screams one or more of, these sweets taste better than cabbage. # who needs teeth? Or you are nothing more than a functioning unit in a consumer economy. Or they scream, buy this doll and for f*** sake accept the historic role of women in a patriarchal society. So I'm not sure they generally go for the subliminal, delicate background. We will have more on this in a future Bugle because I think this is a story that needs our urgent attention and we've overrun this week. So we will return to this in a couple of weeks' time. There's no new Bugle next week, but there will be a spectacular show that Chris is currently currently compiling.
What's the definition of spectacular?
A spectacle.
You are the definition of spectacular.
Then yes, it will be.
F*** you, Chris.
F*** you, Tiff.
Thank you, Tiff and Hari. Thanks very much for coming back on. Have you got any shows coming up?
In Australia. And there are people that listen
to
Australia.
There are doodlers in Australia, yeah.
Yes, I'm going to be in Sydney at the Comedy Store doing my... actually, I'm doing a greatest hit show there. So, like, the 14th of October, I think it is. So, and I'm around Tasmania and Australia. And then back here for a run of Bombshell. Right. If we're still here.
Yes. Well, that's a big if these days. Hari, any shows to plug?
Yes, I'm going to be in London October 10th and 11th at the Soho Theatre. So if you want to see your fifth favourite Bugle co-host, you can.
That's the title of your show, isn't it?
Yes, yes, that is. Else, I'll be in Toronto September 26th and 27th. And all my dates are at harikundabolu.com, or just Google me, because that's the only way you can spell that. So there's ways to find me on the internet.
Some of those places you mentioned, I will also be appearing at soon. I will be at the Soho Theatre from the 18th of December with another Review of the Year show, Andy Zaltzman's Certifiable History. And I do now have my US tour dates largely confirmed.
Andy in the USA. Can I do a jingle for this? Andy in the USA.
It appears you have just done a jingle for it.
So. Where will he be? As soon as he finds it, he'll tell you.
Enough now. I will be in the USA on the 15th of October in San Francisco, the 17th in Phoenix, the 19th and 20th in Los Angeles, the 21st in Portland, the 24th and 25th in Toronto, which I know is technically not in the USA, but, you know, it's in the same global ballpark on a continental level. So that's my little Canada trip for this year. On the 30th of October in Chicago, the 31st in New York, 1st of November in Boston, 5th of November in Philadelphia, the 7th of November in Nashville, that not 100% confirmed yet, but I'm pretty confident it's going to go ahead, and finishing up on the 8th of November in Washington, D.C. So please come to all of those shows. we have left this slightly late again, Buglers, so I really need you to come through on this one. For f*** sake, come to those shows. All the details are on the internet. That's it. I mean, that was not the most convincing plug for a show that I really do need to plug quite hard. So we'll come back. That'll be part of next week's show with the official Andy Zaltzman in the USA 2017 tour advert. That is what you've got to look forward to next week, plus whatever Chris is plotting. I've had various cryptic emails and I'm now slightly scared. That's it for this week's Bugle. Thank you very much for listening, Tiff and Hari. Thanks once again for joining us. Until next week, Buglers, goodbye!
So you're a rhinoscientist, right?
If you like.
Yep, that'll do. Can you clear things up?
What things?
Doesn't matter.